Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, celebrating 30 years, bringing you the best in food and beverage information, both near and abroad. We're not going too far abroad today, are we?
No, we're actually close by.
Back in your old stomping grounds. Of Mendocino County.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time up there.
You did?
Yeah.
And you brought down two people from the deep woods?
That's right. I found them in along the roadside.
That would be Jeff Stanford.
Yeah.
Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Just meeting you. And your nutritionist you've brought along. Is this your personal private nutritionist?
He travels with a nutritionist.
Yes. He also gets to fill the car.
And this is Sid Hillman. Welcome to the show, Sid.
Thanks. Good to be here.
You've been up at the Stanford by the Sea, the Ravens restaurant, for how many years?
11 years.
Doing classes?
11 of Jeff's best years.
and doing classes, nutrition classes?
That's right, yeah. And cooking, too, nowadays.
Cooking classes, too.
Yeah.
Sorry your wife couldn't be here today, but give us the background of the whole complex up there. Remarkable story. When you moved to Mendocino, how you got started?
Oh, it depends on where you want to start, but
let's start 1980-ish or so.
So the inn has gone through many transformations over the last 30 years. We bought it in 1980. We were directed there by some really good friends that owned the Benbow Inn at that time. And they said, you've got to go and see Mendocino. It's a great place for you to be, and then we'll be close, because we were really close. He was like my older brother. And
back up, because most people don't know the Benbow Inn. It's in Garberville, California. Is that correct?
Right. It's a Tudor-style inn that was built by a family named Benbow just before the Depression.
Okay.
The first major depression, the one in 1928-29. Anyway, they owned it at that time, and they really suggested that we take a look at Mendocino, and we did, and we found what was then the Big River Lodge, and we were able to purchase it, having come out of a really difficult partnership in Carmel. And we didn't have a great deal of funds, and it's worth noting that the owners at that time, the Williams, Art Williams and his family, decided to lend us a good part of the down payment. And so they did, and we moved in, and they wanted somebody that would stay there for a few years, because they bought that property in 1964 on the premise that they would be staying there and raising a young family, which they had. And Joan was pregnant at the time that we bought the inn, and we've been there ever since. Almost 38 years.
And you were just up there visiting.
I was. Well, partly because I wanted to see, I had read so much about it, and I think you said, this is much more than an inn, that we have a lot of stuff going on here. And the fact that it is also your restaurant, and we're going to dive into your cookbook, too, during this hour, that it's a vegan restaurant. And I'm totally unaware of any other, I know they're around, but one doesn't find vegan restaurants generally.
Or vegan resorts.
Or vegan resorts or any of that stuff. But the bigger part of it was that it's also a place in which people can come to learn. They can learn cooking, they can learn gardening. And then you have this whole other thing of taking on all kinds of interns who spend time up there with you and learn the ways of the world before they go out.
Yes, well, there's several components, and you've brought them all up at once. The inn is special, and we found that it was special because our guests kept telling us, you know, when you're living at some place, you don't notice so much what's happening to you, but our guests would come in and say, this place is amazing. And they would give us gifts, and it transformed our lives. It's been a very meaningful experience here. We were a bed and breakfast inn. We had just started serving breakfast. The previous owners hadn't served breakfast. And we decided that something special was going on there, and we wouldn't damage that. We wanted to be very careful. And we decided to create gardens, because we had a lot of land and not very many buildings. So we decided to do gardens, and it became known as a garden with an inn because of the extensive vegetable gardens, which were organic, and that we provided restaurants in the area with their vegetables. In the meantime, we were developing plans to open a restaurant, and I was not eating animals. So when we did build a building to put in a restaurant, we took all the vegetables for the restaurant, and of course it was plant-based.
And when did the restaurant open?
The restaurant opened in 1996, technically. We opened to the public in a larger way in 97.
So here we go, 21 years mm-hmm. for the restaurant. And then the inn, which was renamed Stanford by the Sea,
right,
because of your last name, was a bed and breakfast all that time.
It was a bed and breakfast. And the name change came from a writer, a travel writer that actually lived in Palo Alto. And he said, why don't you use your last name? We called it Big River Lodge, a country inn by the sea, because people thought we were in some mountains. Just sounded that way, Big River Lodge, instead of right up on the ocean and over Mendocino Bay. So we added a country inn by the sea, and he said, you really ought to change that to Stanford Inn by the Sea. And we thought, we want to remain anonymous. And he said, you're nuts. Your last name is Stanford. How are you going to be anonymous? Use it. So we did.
So the restaurant is called The Ravens.
The Ravens.
And how did it get its name?
Well, that's
there was a charming story about that in the book.
Yeah, there's an interesting story. So just prior to breaking ground for the restaurant, this was in 1995, we were visiting my father in Carmel, and we were walking along in Monterey, and he pointed to one of the birds there. It was a blackbird. It was a raven, but he called it a crow. He said, I really feel a special affinity to these birds. If something happens to me, I'm coming back as one of them. He died May 18th. On May 31st, the first two pairs of ravens that we'd ever seen arrived on in the treetops above where we have a pool. And that's where how the building got its name. We had to name the building. We decided to name that and the restaurant The Ravens, because once those ravens arrived, they started playing on our, we had a dump truck by that time and a backhoe for dealing with compost for the farm that we'd created. So the ravens liked to play in the compost and play with the mirrors on the dump truck, and the backhoe. So we named that whole area The Ravens, and that's how that building got its name and how the restaurant got mm-hmm. its name. And it was a two-week delay, but I think that I felt that that was him.
Mendocino is so important in the evolution of organic farming in California. That, Santa Cruz, Sonoma, Northern California. Who inspired you in the initial phases of planting that and what your visions were for the gardens?
My closest friend. So we had all this land, and we had landscaped around the main building at the time. This is in 1985. And I decided that what we needed to do was to grow below the driveway, which is another section, flowers for the so we could put flowers in the rooms. And he had just visited an older man named Homer Drinkwater up by Comanche and had smelt his vegetable garden. He said, Jeff, you got to go smell that vegetable garden. It's organic. So we trucked out there, went down to the flats of Big River, and smelt the garden. And I was convinced anyway. I just had never thought of growing food. And I said, this is going to be a great model. And there's some interesting parts about that, because I used to drive by Monsanto, which in St. Louis when I was on my way to college. And they would have these great unlandscaped grassy areas. And I always thought that should be farmed. And I said, we should farm that, our areas like that. And I think, you know, I had no idea who Monsanto or what Monsanto was at that time. But in any case, I had already had that idea for them, and so we did it for ourselves. And he and I dug the first beds, and then eventually we had to have other people helping us dig the beds. We did not use the backhoe. We used shovels, and we double dug. And the inspiration came from a book, How to Grow More Vegetables Than You Ever Thought
John
Possible,
Jevons.
John Jevons. Yeah. Who we had no idea lived 1 hour from us, had just moved to the to Mendocino County in 1984. And we've been working with him closely for 11 years now. But that's another story.
Well, that's a really good story, because he's so instrumental in the whole organic movement. His book continues to sell. thousands of copies every year after 30 years. We have it in our gardening library here. It's an inspirational book.
Do you have the ninth edition? It just came out at the end of last year.
We do. We have all the editions. And so that you worked closely with him gives, I think, our listeners a sense of what your mission is at the lodge and the gardens. Mm.
Right. And we continue to think of ourselves as a hotel or a resort now that belongs to a garden. The garden is central to it.
You had mentioned that interns come up, come from all over the country, maybe all over the world, to work at the gardens?
That's correct. So in 2007, we started a partnership with Grow Biointensive, and which is John Jevons, or one of the names he uses. And we set up dorm rooms, turning stalls in a barn into actual living quarters, and putting in a bathroom, which was already there. We just opened it up to them. And we had three at that time. Now we have four dorm rooms there for these interns to come, and they've come from all over the world. And the first year was a little rough going in 2009 because it was really heavy soil. He picked the worst land that we had. It had been the roadbed for what is now called Comanche Road. It moved a bit to the south, and we started gardening on top of that, and it's just beautiful right now. John just saw it last week.
Mm-hmm. Productive soil at this point.
Yeah. Yes, he can grow soil. His methods allow him to grow soil in, you know, one fiftieth, roughly the time that it takes to do that naturally. But most of that blows away when farmers hit it. So we don't blow anything away.
So you grow a lot of the produce that you serve at the restaurant in the gardens. Is it USDA organic certified?
Yes, it is. And we do grow a lot of produce, but we only grow like about a fifth of what we actually use. We're not that many acres.
And it's called, is it Big Rivers Nurseries?
Big River Nurseries, yes.
And so you sell the overflow to other restaurants?
Or there is no overflow.
Oh, you use it all?
We use it all, or it goes to staff.
Remarkable story, just the gardening portion of the operation.
Right. We were kind of sharing stories about characters because we met a number of years ago around the Valley Oaks Gardens and all of that, and sharing people that we both knew who were it goes back to what was said earlier about how extraordinary Mendocino has been in the establishment of organic agriculture and all this stuff. It's the leading organic wine grape producer, which most people don't know.
Started by Lalonis.
Yeah. And that there were a number of people that we knew jointly that we got to spend time with, you know, Michael Maltus and
York.
Kate Fry.
Kate Fry worked with us.
Yeah.
So when Valley Oaks was sold, she came and worked with us until she was able to establish her landscaping business.
And Jeff Dawson was up there also, wasn't he?
He was, Jeff? Later on.
Lots of great gardeners coming through for inspiration.
Right, and it's the only county that's still a fairly large area that's a non-GMO county.
Jeff Stanford, the co-owner of the inn, is with us coming down from Mendocino today. And Sid Garza-Hillman, the nutritionist of the inn, is with us too. Sid, we'll get to you. We have not forgotten.
I'm enjoying myself. If you had a cup of coffee, I'd never leave.
I'm Steve Garner along with John Ash in the KSRO kitchen. In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash, Jeff Stanford, co-owner of the Ravens Restaurant at the Stanford Inn by the Sea up in beautiful Mendocino County, is with us along with the nutritionist from the inn, Sid Garza-Hillman. John, you just started a question.
I did. That plants are sentient. You know, I don't think anybody thinks about, not anybody, you do, obviously, a sentient being that they're feeling, living, they have souls, all of that stuff. Can you talk about that a little bit?
No. It's like opening a library saying you want to talk about all the books in there.
Yeah.
Plants have feelings. They're sentient in that they respond to their environment, they respond to us, they grow a certain way due to their environment. They are knowing in a way that perhaps we don't understand. As far as whether or not anything has souls, I don't really go there too much mm-hmm. because we can't really talk demonstrate that. If it's undemonstrable, it's no point in really, you know, hassling anybody with that idea. My feeling is that it's all an expression of some kind of energy that you would call soul. But having no basis, science or scientific or even some kind of like deep, horrendously big personal insight from drugs or something, I don't want to go there. I just basically want to say it's all got to be that way from, you know, years of meditation, but I don't know how to prove that. So there's been lots of science done that establishes that plants react to their environment, respond even to thought, to anger and music. They've been able to demonstrate that. That's good enough for me, that they're sentient. And so you want to respect them, and you want to take care of them. And if you're going to provide food for you, I like the idea of letting some of them go all the way, you know, to bolt, to flower, to produce seed. And then, of course, we do collect the seed and save them. We feel that that's a kind of co-creative relationship with nature and with those particular plants. And it makes me feel better about the work that we do. And I think it's perhaps for our staff, it engages them in a more productive way where they're really assisting and caring for the plant beyond the idea of just growing something to eat it.
And I like that you refer to your staff as co-creators.
Yes.
Throughout the book. That's a term you don't often see in a cookbook or philosophy.
Well, the truth is, and we have a guy that was working for us. He's 19 years old. He's back in Mexico now, and he got this idea about ceviche. I don't know where he even knew about ceviche, and he made a cauliflower ceviche. We use it in so many things now. 19 years old. It was his idea. You know, we put tequila in it, you know, mm-hmm. and make it kind of interesting. There's a different ways to approach it. It's in the cookbook. Yeah. But the point is that everybody contributes. Somebody says, I have an idea, and it works.
Before we take a break, Sid, talk about what classes you teach up at the resort, about your background.
I moved up from Los Angeles about 11 years ago, started working at the inn pretty quickly, actually, but moved up as a early retired actor in Los Angeles and a musician, and my wife and I decided to relocate and get out completely the non-Los Angeles experience. So we moved up with our daughter at the time. Now we have two more children. But we were plant-based vegan already, and I discovered that the inn was there, and we thought, this is incredible. Then I wanted to work there, so I interviewed with Jeff. We talked, didn't know he was the owner at the time, but we talked a lot about shoes, and as a result, I got hired. A couple years later, I was managing the restaurant at that time, and then a couple years later, decided to go back to school to become a certified nutritionist. I had been reading about nutrition for years. I cured myself of asthma when I was 24 by changing my diet, and even though I was playing music and acting, was reading voraciously about nutrition. So I went back to school, and Jeff, I said, if I do this and become certified and insured, can I teach? And he said, yes. And so through that process, I began to teach. So I predominantly teach nutrition classes. My title there is the Wellness Programs Director. So I with Jeff and Joan, craft the retreats that we have and the add-on packages and sort of do that programming in terms of that, but also teach the classes. And I do cooking classes now, and on occasion, if we have another instructor, I'll fill in where she's not available, et cetera.
So who comes to your classes?
Well, so it's a pretty interesting mix, actually, the inn is an interesting mix, because the inn, like as Jeff said, it's a resort. It really is. It's not a health retreat. It really is not. We have a wellness center that has more to offer than virtually any wellness center I've ever seen, and a lot of people come and take advantage of those classes, or they come not knowing that they're going to, but then they see when they check in, they see the newsletter and everything, go, oh, that'd be fun. Let me take that. And we really craft all of our classes to be super accessible, really fun. Even funny. It's all about having a good time, and that this is a fun way to live, not a restrictive way to live. And so we get all kinds. Some people come specifically for, like, the end of this month, we have somebody coming for our healthy living retreat. That's what it's an add-on. They're coming for that. Other people show up and they just, I'll take a class. Why not? You know, and they book that class and they do it, and it's really fun.
Does it very often that someone says, I eat meat all the time, but I'm curious?
Sure, all the time.
The word curious is big now.
Well, you know, Jeff and I and Joan figure, we figure 90% odd maybe in the realm are not vegan or vegetarian that come to the inn. And so we get a lot of people in the restaurant who this is their first vegan dining experience ever. And they start asking questions. They're curious or not. They have a great time either way. But if they ask questions, then we're there to say, oh, cool. You know, and we have that conversation with them either at the table or they end up booking a class and giving it a shot and seeing what that's like. And oftentimes they come back, you know, a year later and they've made pretty good changes in their diet.
We'll take a break at that point. When we come back, the next part of the show, we'll jump into the cookbook, Dining at the Ravens, over 150 nourishing vegan recipes from the Stanford Inn by the Sea. Jeff Stanford's here with us, his wife, Jeff and Joan, own the beautiful inn and the restaurant. And we're joined today by Sid Garza Hillman. Sid is the nutritionist on site at Dining at the Ravens up in Mendocino County. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO kitchen. In the KSRO kitchen, we're doing a virtual tour of Mendocino County at the Ravens restaurant, the Stanford Inn by the Sea, co-owner with his wife Joan. Jeff Stanford's here. Joan couldn't make it, but Sid Garza Hillman, the nutritionist at the inn, is with us today also. Should we jump into the book?
We should. Well, one of the things that, and I hadn't thought about it, but what is the essential piece of equipment in the kitchen?
It's in the book.
Yeah, read the book.
It's the Vitamix.
Yeah.
Or the Blendtec.
I was going to say the cook.
No, because I sometimes have cooked in there. So sometimes we have great technicians in the kitchen. We do have great cooks. But yes, to make the sauces, to make stuff extra creative, and to make many of our soups, we use a Vitamix or Blendtec.
So for people who don't know what those are, they're kind of blenders on testosterone or something.
Totally.
Is that?
Yes. Yeah. If you use the Vitamix, and I suppose it's true for the Blendtec too, and just keep it going, it will actually cook the soup. Mm-hmm. It actually so
produces
much friction.
That much heat and friction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. People who own Vitamixes, there's definitely an elitism. Mm-hmm. They're like, you don't have a Vitamix?
I can't
believe you live that way.
I have my dad's Vitamix from the 70s, and it's stainless steel with a spout on the bucket.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Because he would make soup that way.
Yeah.
Your dad did?
My dad did.
It seems like a generation removed. My dad would barely know how to open a can of Campbell's soup. And your dad seemed to be
and that's
very
why he used the Vitamix. You see, the Vitamix allowed him to make something without actually doing too much.
Is it needed a new motor, new parts?
Actually, it still runs. It's someplace in the kitchen. I'm not sure exactly where. Probably down in the pantry. But we have used it on emergencies where the other Vitamixes have broken. Now we have backups in our storeroom.
Remarkable. Well, let's jump into the book. I guess we start with breakfast. Is that probably the first place we start?
Well, that's when most of our guests actually will eat there because it's complimentary. Or otherwise, when it's free, don't pass it up so they come in.
How many recipes? Are all the recipes yours? Are they yours and Joan's? Are they a combination of the cooks that have come through the inn and restaurant?
I actually, all the recipes are tweaked. So none of them are any one person. So there's so many people involved. The breakfast recipes are, for the most part, they're not really constructed. I mean, the hollandaise sauce is a hollandaise sauce and so forth. They're all taken from classic recipes like a Benedict. And rather than use eggs, we use tofu, which we put turmeric in because I read that turmeric was really healthy for you. And it shows in India and studies that they were doing at the University of Boston shows that turmeric reduces the onset of Alzheimer's disease. So I decided to put turmeric in everything, including our braising sauce. We try not to fry and use oil. And most of the breakfast is pretty much oil-free.
So frittatas and hollandaise, but using not eggs, obviously. But do people rave about the hollandaise sauce?
They do, but that's got a lot of fat in it due to the fact that we're using Earth Balance, a plant-based butter.
Okay.
One person, when we switched to vegan from vegetarian, said, fine move, but I'm never going to like the vegan holidays. This one here is just going to be, you can't beat it. And he was just having the vegan one. So it was a pretty cool thing to see people.
So how do you make it? This vegan holidays.
Basically, there's three ingredients.
Yeah. Vitamix. and that's the truth.
Yeah. Vitamix, butter, turmeric, and tofu. Mm-hmm. But that makes four. And some spicing.
But it's not butter. It's the...
No, it's Earth Balance.
Yeah.
But the important thing to know is that I did not know what happened in dairies and hatcheries until the end of 2004. I had no idea. So I'd been vegetarian for years. There's no way to do dairy humanely. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, I'm done. And I became vegan. Well, the inn had been serving eggs and regular dairy, and I had to slowly pull out of that. So guests did not know when we were switching from you know, on our scones. No longer we were using butter from those guys down in, I can't even remember now, Strauss butter. Yeah. We pulled out of all of that, and they didn't even know that the stuff was vegan. Everything they got was vegan, except if they wanted eggs, and then we put eggs on it. And then I couldn't live with that any longer. The cognitive dissonance was too much, and we got rid of it. And boy, we had some pushback. A lot of kickback on that one. We had a lot of kickback in 1996 when we started that, you know, opened up for dip breakfast and told people it's vegetarian, because we had a much fuller menu then than we'd had as a bed and breakfast inn. They got mad at us and had been vegetarian all along. People would yell at me in the lobby, literally true. And then that happened again when they found out that we were had taken the butter out of their scones, and they had never noticed. You know, it's very interesting. By the way, John would probably be interested in that. Every time we changed from one kind of butter to another, when organic butter became finally available, we went to a particular brand, I don't want to mention it, and we were able to use less of it and get the same effect. And then we went to Strauss, we were able to use even less of it and get the same effect. And then we went to Earth Balance, and still less. So the amount of fat and still get that shortness that we could get in the scones is amazing, because we've been able to reduce it over the years.
And you get that recipe in the breads,
it's in
and
there,
baked
yes.
goods section of
so,
the book.
So the scones, also the scone recipe, which is interesting about it, and I think you mentioned it earlier, has an egg replacement in it. What is that?
It's tapioca. Right. And you can make an egg replacement for other purposes just using ground flax with water. It works very well.
I saw, and it does. And it performs the same way that...
Just the binding.
Yeah.
Yes.
We'll take a break at that point. Dining at the Ravens, over 150 nourishing vegan recipes from the Stanford Inn by the Sea. Jeff Stanford co-wrote the book with his wife, Joan. He's in the studio along with Sid Garza-Hillman, the nutritionist from the Inn and Restaurant. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash. At the end of the show, we'll give away a copy of the book to one lucky KSRO listener. This is KSRO. In the KSRO kitchen, Steve Garner, John Ash, Jeff Stanford, and Sid Garza-Hillman. We're going to jet through the sauces, dips, and spreads section, the appetizers and sides. Then we'll jump over and we'll do soups very quickly, salads and dressings, entrees. And we have to have time for desserts, because there's some stunning desserts. Mm-hmm. You can tell my sweet tooth is rearing its head. So, John, anything in the... section of sauces, dips, and spreads?
Well, again, the Vitamix figures prominently in this.
And that you grow wasabi blew my mind, too. Not just horseradish. You still grow wasabi on the property?
No, we're going to be growing wasabi on the practice.
Yeah. But we buy the real stuff. And we use the real stuff in the restaurant.
It's very different than horseradish. Yeah. Much more complex and mild.
Not well, and unfortunately, the wasabi that you buy in the market, the dried stuff, isn't really wasabi. Anyway, so...
It's horseradish.
Yeah, it's great. So one of the things that I... This whole section, because these are these things that link ingredients together, these dips and spreads and sauces. But one was the cilantro mint pesto, to which you added coconut.
One yesterday.
Yeah,
with
I did
kale.
Kale, basil. And I mean, probably for the entire batch, I used a teaspoon of oil, and it was really good. We used some miso and walnuts, a nutritional yeast. It was excellent.
And on to the appetizers and side dish. That's where the cauliflower ceviche recipe
is. And the crabless cakes. What are those?
Oh. And interesting in that the picture doesn't match. We have a variety of crabless cakes. So crab cakes are wonderful, and they take their flavor from two things. Fat, you know, they're fried, and Old Bay Spice. Or you can actually find how to make Old Bay Spice online. And we figured that out. We put mushrooms or zucchini in it, or you actually just need zucchini and some breadcrumbs and such, and you can make something that wins an award that they can't give you because there's supposed to be crab in it. We did that once.
That took a lot of cojones, I thought, to enter your crabless crab cake in the Mendocino crab cake recipe contest. Good for you.
Luckily, we had there was a judge in there that said, I want you to know that you actually won. And I don't think she knew it was our crab cake, but she was one of the judges, and that was Domenica Catelli.
I don't think you credited her in the book for
around. It's just around the circuit. We're back where we started.
Salads and dressings and soup section is the next couple ones up. I like the roasted fennel and cannellini bean soup with garlic. That sounded like a great winter soup, and a classic potato leek soup with drunken leeks and crispy leeks. Leeks always. Really great looking recipe. And that used coconut cream. So that's pretty popular in a lot of your recipes, using some type of coconut derivatives.
Right. We were under the illusion then that coconut was particularly healthy. It's not any healthier than other things, but coconut milk is a good milk. You could also use soy milk in that.
Plus, it has flavor.
It adds flavor, and you've got to be careful because that flavor is slightly sweet, and it can affect the outcome. But that potato leek soup is very popular.
Yeah,
we sell out of it whenever we have it.
So the other thing that shows up a lot as an ingredient in sauces and soups and all are cashews.
Yes.
Important part, and that's where the Vitamix comes in also, doesn't it? To make a lot of the creams.
Yeah, we're experimenting. Like right now we do our cheese with almonds. We've switched from cashews
There's reasons for that. We found out what was happening. So cashews have Rux-Tox, which is the active ingredient of poison oak for people locally. And it causes the hands of the women that harvested the seed out of the cashew apple structure, it causes their fingers to become disfigured because they don't give them rubber gloves, apparently. So when we found that out, we wanted to ease our impact on the environment and on these women, and so we're trying to reduce our use of cashews. And we found that out after this book was published. But we're using walnuts much more. They're grown here. Hazelnuts, they're grown right on our property. They grow them up in a lot in Oregon. We're using almonds, which are grown all over the state, trying to make a statement with regard to the nuts that we use.
No idea. And walnuts are grown up in Lake County too, aren't they? It's pretty important.
Yeah, the hardwood forests of the Midwest that are all gone now, that was mostly walnuts.
And that's where you came from, wasn't it?
That's where I came from.
Kansas City, St. Louis area, barbecue company.
Yes, and we can still do a good barbecue sauce.
So talk about raw lasagna.
Raw lasagna consists of raw fruit.
Raw veggies.
with a pesto. And I actually have to look at the recipe.
On occasion, we'll get raw guests. And so we created with our creative director at the time, Sadhana Burko, some raw dishes that we had on hand that we could create on the fly, basically. Somebody would come in and say, hey, can you do a raw entree for us? This is one of those. And it's fantastic.
And you have to talk about your signature dish, the sea vegetable strudel.
Sea palm strudel.
Sea palm strudel. Did you have that, John, when you dined up there?
I did.
Describe, that's a seaweed.
It's a quite beautiful little seaweed. And also Mendocino, the town of Mendocino is famous. Aren't there two seaweed producers up there?
Right, now? Mendocino Sea Vegetable and...
Rising Tide.
Rising Tide, thank you. Rising Tide Sea Vegetable, and they collect sea palm and as well as other seaweeds. Most of our seaweed used to come from Ryan Snow, who was the county's naturalist in those days. But we started with sea palm strudel back, I think, about 1998. Mendocino Sea Vegetable Company came and threw at us a bunch of sea palm and said, do you think you can find some use for this? Well, we did. We came up with the sea palm strudel and some other dishes, but the sea palm strudel is by far the most popular, and it's been in Japan. It's been on television, and several different people have covered it, and it's been written about in Japan because they love seaweed there much more so than we do. But sea palm is a form of kelp, and it's a brown seaweed, and it's extremely healthy for human beings, particularly in the case of be honest, nuclear war. And because it helps remove things like cesium-90 and 70 and those kinds of isotopes from the body. It's the algenic acid in it. So it's a very healthy plant.
And it's delicious.
Mm-hmm. And since this seaweed is collected off our coast, we actually had, due to the Fukushima thing, a Geiger counter to check. This is serious. To actually check to see if we were affected. We were not. But by the Fukushima radiation.
Remarkable. On to desserts, since we're closing up
shop. Are we getting into too much detail?
No, not at all. No, it's a perfect amount of detail. So your favorite desserts in the section? We'll start with Sid first.
Yes. No, I have a sweet tooth, too. I like them all. Probably I'm still partial to the pecan tort, just because that was one of the first ones I ever had at the end. Jeff thinks it's too sweet. There's no way to be too sweet. There's no way to be too sweet, period.
It's the most requested recipe at the restaurant.
It's one of them.
The scone is the most requested.
The scone. And then the pecan tart.
It's one of them. We get a pretty even, the creamy soups, we get a lot of requests for that. But yeah, that pecan tort is a good
one. And the hollandaise sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When they find out it's vegan,
pancakes, we get a lot, you know.
And so in that, you don't use corn syrup, obviously, in that pecan tort, do you?
No,
we don't even have corn syrup.
And anywhere in the restaurant.
No.
So you would use hazelnuts and almonds and...
Maple syrup.
Maple syrup is the sweetener. You also use what other sweeteners in the restaurant?
Agave on occasion, evaporated cane.
Wood canoes. Canoes made actually in Mendocino County to our specifications by a guy named Robert Cummings. He does an outstanding job. We're putting sails on a bunch of them. We've had sails before. We're redoing that.
Solar motors. It's very cool. Yeah.
Yes. And they don't tip over because of the outriggers. They have two outriggers. And we've tried to make it really accessible because we're the longest undeveloped estuary in the state. And it's really cool. But there is some development in the sense that the old dams are there from holding the logs back because the mill was on the flats across from Catchikanoo. So the wood would come down there. But that's the only development. And then you have to go way upriver to find any other development, and that's Homer Drinkwater's farm on the flats. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing your passion and knowledge, both of you. It's wonderful having you in Santa Rosa today on the show. Would you give us your favorite number today, Jeff, between 1 and 10?
9.
You didn't even miss a beat.
No.
Any particular significance to that number?
It has to do with being my father's favorite number and the interesting things that happen with 9. If you can add all the figures up in a long long bunch of figures and add up to 9, it's always going to be divisible by 9.
Caller number 9 at 636-1350 will win a copy of Dining at the Ravens, over 150 nourishing vegan recipes from the Stanford Inn by the Sea. It will be shipped directly from the Stanfords to you, wherever you're calling.